We've got about one more minute for you to assemble. And just as a final reminder, when you're finished at the end of the session today, if you would just put your little automated clicker things in the center of the table, and I'm going to come around and collect them so I can find them from all those papers that will probably be left behind the extra handouts and things. That would be fabulous. Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started with our other favorite topic, catheter-associated UTI, a reporting catheter-associated UTI in NHSN. Okay, so we've got similar objectives. We're going to review the requirements for catheter-associated urinary tract infection for reporting to CMS through NHSN. We're going to apply the definitions as defined, and we're going to use case studies to help you work with the definitions. And we're also going to kind of go over how to count your denominators up in NHSN CAUTI. We're also going to define some key terms related to urinary catheter-associated UTI. Okay, so here is that website that I hope you all are very familiar with. This is the website that has all the information you ever want to talk about related to NHSN. And this is that resource library I was telling you about. This has got that ICD-9 code Excel spreadsheet. It also has a complete organism list and a list of common commensals. So you can actually look up the organisms yourself. What you do is if you're not sure if it's a common commensal or a pathogen, look at your common commensal list. If it's not there, then go back and look at the total organism list. If that is there, then that is a pathogen for reporting into NHSN. So the problem is we are also busy sometimes, aren't we? And we don't always have time to look at all the resources. But we have got a tremendous amount of resources. We have all kinds of resources for how to report in CMS or what kind of different facilities that are coming forward for reporting in CMS. How do we define these facilities? It's all there for your use. If you cannot find what you need, email the help desk and we'll point you to it. Okay? Now, resources for surveillance for CAUTI, urinary catheter-associated UTI, you're going to use these chapters. You're going to have your monthly reporting plan. Chapter 7 is your catheter-associated UTI protocol. It was updated in January 2012. Don't forget that Chapter 14, and there's some information in Chapter 16 as well. And here's your resources. These are the forms. Remember, you can print them off if you need them to use for hard copies, and these will have the same fields on them that you will be reporting when you go into the application and report. Okay, and in this case, we're going to go over this. We'll have a denominators that you'll be completing for catheter-associated UTI. We have lots of training available, including a new kind of training called Lectora. The Lectora trainings are interactive, so they're not totally boring, and you don't necessarily have the person droning on for 2 hours. You can actually read a very interactive training program. So they're all here. We have this training website. And if you, for some reason, want to ask for live training, there will be a place there in the training website that you can put in your request. Okay? Look at all the training we've got available for you in your spare time. Okay? And why do we do CAUTI? I'm going to say CAUTI surveillance, because it is the most common healthcare-associated HAI. Over 30% of infections reported to NHSN are CAUTI, and many of the UTIs are associated with urinary catheters. It is also a leading cause of bloodstream infection, and many times the infections are inappropriately aimed, are treated inappropriately. So another big key issue, not to mention that we're doing the right thing to try to prevent HAIs in our patients, is that there is that emphasis on mandatory reporting, public reporting of infections, and our facilities are concerned about denial of reimbursement from CMS once we start putting in our data and we're no longer doing paid for reporting, it'll be paid for performance. Okay, so here again is that slide I showed last time, and you can see here we have TAUDI for acute care hospitals occurring in January 2012, but down below here you can see that we've got long-term care hospitals reporting beginning October 2012 and inpatient rehab facilities reporting in October 2012. And in CMS, they call long-term care hospitals, that's what we call LTACs, the long-term acute care facilities, okay? All of the information for how you would look at, if you have a facility type like this in your facility, we have guidance as to whether this particular facility will be included for CMS. So the CMS final rule was published last August, and you must follow the NHSN CAUTI exactly and report completely in a timely manner. And remember, NHSN is the vehicle for CMS reporting, but if you belong to a state that has mandatory reporting for the state, you'll still have to continue to report using those criteria. We don't get involved in that. If they choose to use NHSN, that's fine. But you'll be using NHSN for CMS reporting, and also if you want to follow TAUDI just for your own purposes, using NHSN as well. So TAUDI reporting includes reporting of denominator data. In this case, we're talking denominator data goes back to the location of where the patient was when the catheter was in place. So our denominator is different, isn't it, than SSI? Our denominator will be counting how many patient days are occurring for that month on that unit, how many patients, how many indwelling catheter days were occurring on that unit for the month of May, for example. And there are two types of infections you'll be reporting for catheter-associated UTI, SUTI and ABUTI. And we always used to have a good time with ABUTI, but, you know, it gets a little boring sometimes. Not really. But ABUTI is a lot of fun to play around with. So SUTI is a symptomatic UTI, but an ABUTI is an asymptomatic bacteremic UTI, okay? So we'll go over that today. Those are what you have to report for catheter-associated infections. Those are the two sets of criteria. And remember, we also want you to show that there are no infections. If you happen to get no infection for the ICU or the unit you're tracking, your TAUDI's on. So this is the way that you will show, for example, for the month of October here in 2011, this facility had no events, or so they will put in their days. We want to count days, patient days and urinary catheter days. But if you're fortunate enough to go a whole month without an infection on that unit, we want you to say, report no events, and you'll check that, and it lets us know that you counted all your days. We want those days in your denominator, but the great news is you had no infections, and you will denote that, okay? Data must be reported to NHSN either manually or by file import using clinical document architecture, and it must be reported monthly within 30 days of the end of the month for which it is collected. So basically, we really prefer you not waiting 6 months to put in your days and your infections, because you won't really be able to do good infection control practice if you're starting to see a trend on a unit. By the time you put in these data, you're not going to be able to make any changes and help prevent infections. So try to keep up with it. Plus, believe me, you'll be happy in the end. When it gets close to the time that the reporting is due, you'll be tearing your hair out. Plus, the volume of people using the application a couple weeks before the mandatory cutoff for CMS reporting, it's very, very heavy, okay? So for data to be shared with CMS, each quarter's data must be entered into NHSN no later than 4.5 months at the end of the quarter. So for example, like I said earlier, quarter one, January through March, must be entered into NHSN by August 15th. Okay, quarter two by November 15th, quarter three by February, quarter four by May 15th, okay? But we're not even going to go there because you're going to keep up with it, right? Okay, and you'll be happy you did. County data submitted to NHSN by by you all who are hospitals that are participating in this type of reporting to CMS, and we will provide certain data to CMS. We do not provide all of your data. We try to be as confidential as we can, but these are the kind of information we will be sending over to them: the number of observed catheter-associated UTIs, the number of expected, that's using the SIR, will be showing the indwelling catheter days and the hospital-specific county standard infection ratio. Okay, so those are the things that will go across to CMS. You can also view your own statistics on the CMS website, and we actually have ways for you to check your data in analysis to make sure everything you're reporting to CMS is showing up. So there, that guidance is on our homepage of the NHSN help webpage. Okay? So the additional piece of information is that long-term acute care and inpatient rehab facilities will be reporting CAUTIs beginning October 2012. Okay? And if your facility has these locations, hopefully you've been following the guidance about whether this particular facility meets the criteria to be called one of these facilities and locations, and also that you're in process of getting that all set up so that you can report in October. The guidance is available. There's a CMS page that has all of the information for you. If you can't find it, email the help desk and someone will point you to it. Okay, so each LTAC, long-term acute care, and IRF, inpatient rehab facility with a separate CCN number must enroll in NHSN as a separate facility and map the location to the appropriate location type. So these are the kind of things that hopefully you've been working with your departments as we get ready for that reporting in October. All other guidelines, basically all of these areas will be reporting using our criteria for acute care. Okay, so remember, infection prevention and control begins with surveillance. That's how you get an idea of what's going on in your facility. That's what it's all about. It's really not about particularly public reporting of infections. It's really about you identifying what's going on in your facility and whether you've got a problem. And we've got to have surveillance tools. And for you all that are new to infection prevention, you know, this is where you get to know your facility. How do you have the data? How do you find the data you need to meet criteria? Is your medical record paper, online, or both? Where can I find the information I need? Your QI people can help you. You may be the QI people. If you need help, you need to go to your administrator to help you identify ways. If you're new to infection prevention, you can also call on your peers in the community. We've all been new before, and we all can guide each other and teach you how to get a handle on how to get information in order to count your CAUTIs in an appropriate way. And what are we going to look at when you look at your chart review? You may want to look at a positive urine culture and then check your indwelling catheter days. It's really great if you have time to go on interdisciplinary rounds in the ICU. That way you can be working with the clinical people as well as you identify in a real-time measure the infections going on in your ICU. Okay, so consistency is a must. Surveillance is designed to look at the population at risk. You identify the patients meeting criteria. You consistently meet these criteria, and that's why these lectures are so popular, because we're all trying to work together to consistently understand how to meet the criteria, and it ensures that our data are comparable. Okay, this protects your facility and others as well. What if there's clinical disagreement? And I had a couple of ladies that came up on the break, and you know, we'll have the physician that disagrees with our surveillance definition, won't we? Sometimes. And so we have to remind them, and if you ever get a very irate administrator or physician, we at the NHSN help desk, VIPs, are used to sometimes contacting, they'll give us the physician, they'll send us his email or her email, and we'll answer them back with the rationale if you feel uncomfortable. So we'll let you know, we'll CC you on it as well. But we can be there to adjudicate when you have a problem with your administrator, your physician, and you don't know exactly how to phrase this particular teaching point that we're trying to get across. So remember, our surveillance criteria for both SSI and CAUTI are designed to track a large amount of information over very disparate hospitals and facilities, right? We have some tiny hospitals that have 2 beds, and we have hospitals in NHSN that have over 1,200 beds. So you can see where these surveillance definitions, they have to be applied in a certain way. We're not looking at clinical infection as much as we're trying to identify this infection for surveillance purposes. So that's why our criteria are designed as they are, and usually when we tell that to the physicians, in a certain way, they're usually mollified. So don't hesitate to use us if you need us, okay? Key terms. All catheter-associated UTIs must be healthcare-associated in order for us to have you report them in NHSN. We're not interested in people coming in with a catheter that's infected because we couldn't affect any kinds of changes in our policies and procedures to prevent that, right? So we're all about healthcare-associated infections. And here we go. Our healthcare-associated infection is a localized or systemic condition resulting from an adverse reaction to the presence of an infection agent or its toxin, occurs in a healthcare setting, and was not present or incubating at the time of admission unless the infection was related to a previous admission. Another term we're talking about, what is an indwelling urinary catheter, and which ones are we counting for purposes of reporting in NHSN? And an indwelling catheter is a drainage tube that is inserted into the urinary bladder through the urethra, is left in place, and is connected to a collection system. This includes a collection system that is used for irrigation of any type of duration. That includes intermittent or continuous irrigation. It is also called a Foley catheter and does not include any straight in and out catheter results, suprapubic catheter, or nephrostomy tube. So we're interested in this definition of an indwelling catheter. Those are the events that you will be tracking, and those are the catheter days you will be counting on your unit. Okay? And it does include catheters that are changed from bed bags to leg bags, vice versa. In other words, we understand that sometimes facilities, especially rehab facilities, may have to disconnect as the patient is learning to walk around the unit. We know that disconnecting and reconnecting to the bedside bag is going to raise the risk of infection, but we do want you to include that in your denominator and in your numerator, okay? A UTI, a urinary tract infection, in a patient who had an indwelling catheter in place at the time of or within 48 hours prior to the specimen collection or onset of sign or symptoms is considered a UTI in NHSN. And right now, there is no minimum time that a urinary catheter must be in place in order for the UTI to be considered catheter associated. Okay, location of attribution. How are we going to attribute this infection? Remember, with SSIs, our infections refer back to the surgical procedure itself, right? But with device-associated infections, that includes CAUTI, it includes CLABSI, and it includes pneumonia, those infections refer back to a location. And it's important to know, because we're tracking infections that are in ICUs. We may be tracking infections on hospital wards. Wouldn't you think that patients in ICUs have more catheter days and may be at higher risk for your CAUTI rate? So when you read our annual report, you'll see that these infections are stratified by location. So this is where it gets important in how we count the catheter days and patient days for the specific location, okay? And we also can apply the transfer rule from one inpatient location to the other in the same facility, and we'll go over that later. Here's our example. Mr. Smith is transferred from SICU with a Foley, and 36 hours after transfer, he develops a fever of 38.2 degrees centigrade. The next day, a urine culture collected has greater than 10 to the 5 colony-forming units of E. coli. This CAUTI is attributed to the SICU. So you see that within 48 hours, this CAUTI developed, the first symptom developed, so you will attribute the infection as coming from the surgical intensive care unit. Okay, here's our criteria and application of our protocol. Again, we are following two criteria for CAUTI: symptomatic UTI, we call it SUDI, and asymptomatic bacteremic UTI, ABUDI. Okay? So, was an indwelling catheter in place at the time of or within 48 hours prior to the urine specimen collection or onset of symptoms? That's your key question. Okay? And here's our overview of the criteria. It's very complicated when you open up our protocol. There's all these 1As and 1Bs, but I just want to get this down to you. 1A and 2A relate to infections associated with urinary catheters. Okay? So remember, our HAI criteria, NHSN has healthcare-associated infection criteria for all healthcare-associated infections, including regular UTI. Is there anybody here from Pennsylvania? Okay, Pennsylvania has to report all healthcare-associated infections. So we do have criteria for HAI urinary tract infection, but for most of us, we'll only be tracking the catheter-associated. So here we've got criterion 1A, the urine culture grows 10 to the 5th, 100,000 colonies of a pathogen with no more than two species. And if that's so, then you can meet criterion 1A. Criterion 2A is a little different. You do have a catheter in place, or a catheter has been in place within 48 hours of the first sign and symptom or the urinary culture. But in this case, you're only growing a smaller amount of organism. You're growing from 1,000 to 10,000 colony-forming units of an organism. But in this case, in these criteria, we add the urinary, the positive urinalysis signs and symptoms. So if you can meet the urinalysis signs and symptoms and you have that particular smaller amount of a positive urine culture, you can actually meet criterion 2A. And of course, our babies are different, right? Little ones and infants, their immune systems are different. They present differently with infection. So we have criteria 3 and 4 for patients less than or equal 1 year of age. And we have criterion 3, again, for them. That's that 100,000 colonies of an organism. And criterion 4 talks about using the UA and the 1,000 to 10,000 colony-forming units of an organism. And we have these specific criteria because infants are going to present differently. They're going to have apnea and bradycardia sometimes, so we have to have a specific set of criteria for the infant. But just a note, if you have an infant or a child with a CAUTI, you can actually meet you can always use the adult criteria. They're very simple. If you have 100,000 colony-forming units of an organism and you have a fever of 38.7, then you can meet the SUDI criteria, the main criteria, that you don't have to look specifically for the baby's criteria. So just to know that. There was a question Or did you get it answered? Yes. Right. Right. So 10 to the fifth is the first. That's the definitive one we all know. When we have 10 to the fifth colony-forming units, 100,000 colonies of E. coli, we know that is a positive urine culture, right? But what we identified when criteria were reviewed, when the new CAUTI guidelines were developed back in 2009, some of our criteria changed as we did research looking at the new guidelines. So we realized that there were sometimes good findings, 10 to the 3 to 10 to the 4, I mean 10 to the 3 to 10 to the 5 could be really an important finding, but you have to back it up with a positive urinalysis as well. Okay, so here we go with our SUDI 1A. The patient has an indwelling catheter in place at the time of specimen collection or onset of symptoms, and at least one of the following signs and symptoms were identified: fever, suprapubic tenderness, costovertebral angle pain or tenderness, and that positive culture of 10 to the 5, 100,000 colony-forming units with no more than two species. If that happens, you can count that patient's infection as symptomatic UTI and criterion 1A, and if the patient has a urinary catheter in place, it is also catheter-associated. Okay, or we know that we have that 48-hour window, so that below the O or is explaining that you meet these same criteria, slightly different, because the patient still is within that 48-hour window of having that urinary catheter, but it's no longer in place. So if you look carefully, you can see we've added some symptoms, haven't we? We have added, once the catheter is out, we've added urgency, frequently, dysuria. We know that urgency and frequency can occur when a catheter is in place, and it has nothing to do with the fact that you may have an infection. It's the fact that there's the catheter is in place. So once that catheter is out, you actually can have more symptoms to pick up to meet your criteria. Okay? Now, a lot of times people say, well, I really can't meet these criteria up here because I can't find documentation of costovertebral angle pain or tenderness or suprapubic tenderness. That's true. But if you are lucky enough to be able to do interdisciplinary rounds and things like that, that's when you would go to the physician and say, you know, more and more we're using laboratory findings to diagnose our patients. But if you do a good physical exam and you poke that patient in their costovertebral angle area, they're going to jump if they have the pain there. But somebody has to do the physical exam to do it. So I just want to let you know, you can't always intervene, but to let you know that if somebody has these symptoms and if you work with your clinical staff, perhaps they can check for these symptoms, then you might be able to meet 1A. Once the catheter is out, though, you can add these other symptoms because you no longer have that catheter there, and you can add these symptoms in. Yes. With no other recognized cause means that you're going to, you know, if they're instilling chemotherapy in somebody's kidney at the same time that this is going on or whatever, there may be a non-infectious reason why we have a situation. So what we're saying is, and this particular phrase may be taken out and we're tweaking our definitions to be a little bit more easy to clarify, it just means that you have no other non-infectious recognized cause for whatever sign and symptom. And this particular phrase actually crosses through several of the protocols. Well, not necessarily. It doesn't always mean that, but we can get into fever, which is a nonspecific infection marker, and with fever, which is nonspecific, you may end up, especially with a very sick patient, having two healthcare-associated infections, a CAUTI and a pneumonia, perhaps, and you can use fever as the common symptom as well. Okay, so we can go into that. We actually have a case study related to that. Symptomatic 2A is the patient has an indwelling catheter in place, and we have here some signs and symptoms, the fever, suprapubic tenderness or costovertebral angle tenderness, and in this case, we've got that positive urinalysis here we have to meet, the positive dipstick, pyuria, microorganisms seen on grain stain, and then we have that positive culture with a lesser amount of organisms. If you can meet that UA finding and you have that positive culture with no more than two species, then you can meet criterion 2A. Criterion 2, the bottom part here just talks about that window within 48 hours that the catheter is no longer in place, so you can add those other symptoms, right, to meet those criteria as well, okay, because we don't have the catheter in place. Okay, and here's a great flow diagram for you that sometimes it's more helpful for people to see and follow the criteria that way. Patients with a urinary catheter at time of specimen collection or onset of symptoms, and again, what we talked about is that we're not going to use those urgency, frequency, and dysuria in a patient with a catheter in place. And here's our little one's criteria. Criteria 3 is the patient is less than 1 year with or without an indwelling catheter and has the symptoms above. You can see here we've got core temperature, we have hypothermia, we have apnea and bradycardia, lethargy. Those are the kind of things that symptoms that infants have that are different than our adults. And then 4 is the patient, again, less than 1 year that has a positive urinalysis, and we have that 10 to the 3 to less than 10 to the 5 colony-forming unit criteria. So it's the same as the adult, but the signs and symptoms are set up for the infant. Okay? And many times we really, in the infant population, don't have a follow catheter-associated UTI. Many times infants are not catheterized. But sometimes they are in pediatric hospitals. But so this is not, catheter-associated UTI is probably not too common. And here's our asymptomatic Factory McAbuti definition, UTI. Okay, we realized that we had to have a mechanism to count infections when the patient clearly has a positive urine culture and a matching positive blood culture, but the patient has no signs and symptoms of infection. But truly, if you've got a positive urine culture and a matching positive blood, then you've got something going on in this patient. And, you know, we really do have higher-risk patients that we're caring for. And sometimes our highly immunocompromised patients will not show the same signs and symptoms of infection. But we know we've got something going here. So that's where Abuti came in. Abuti basically is a symptomatic urinary tract, asymptomatic urinary tract infection with a matching blood culture, secondary blood culture. So basically any AIDS patient has a positive urine culture of greater than 10 to the 5th, but in this case, we want you only to count if uropathogens have been identified. And in what we have down here in the arrow is we specify the uropathogen microorganisms, okay? These are the uropathogens. You have to have an infection with uropathogen and a matching blood culture in order to count the Abuti. But the good news is when you go to account it, we've got it written. We've got exactly written the uropathogens. With the other regular UTI and CAUTI, any organism that's a pathogen can be met to meet that criteria, okay? So this is quite counted as often. Remember, only catheters added within 48 hours prior to urine collection are considered catheter-associated. Yes. The patient had a catheter in place within 48 hours But next year we're going to change that. So let's just, we're going to go to a calendar day, okay? And that, you know, what we're trying to do, I know it's good for our brains, don't you think? But what we're really trying to do is be consistent across all the protocols. And so we have some growing pains as we do that. So, well, it's 48 hours right now. If the patient has, we have the marker here, it's written, if it's less than or equal to 48 hours, then that's what we count. You go back and count. If the patient had a catheter in place during that time frame, then you can meet the criteria. Okay? So here's our event. Okay? We're going to complete the top part of the urinary tract infection event form. And required fields, remember, have those asterisks, right? So here's our required fields. And here our event type is called UTI. The date of the event is required. It's got that asterisk. It's the date the sign or symptoms appeared or date the diagnosing urine specimen was collected, whichever comes first. And post-procedure UTI, this is not used very often. This is probably going to go away, so don't worry about it. But basically, this is an optional field. You mark yes if you're tracking this and it occurs after an NHSN-defined procedure but before discharge. So you may be tracking a certain kind of surgical site, surgery, and you're trying to find out whether you have secondary UTIs or UTIs related to this surgery. So you would just say yes or no. This is not used very often. MDRO, again, just as we do with SSI, enter yes only if the pathogen is being followed for the MDRO module under infection surveillance, not lab ID. And so if you're not following that, don't worry about it. Okay? Required entry. Now, in this case, location is required. Because remember, what are we talking about here? Device-associated infection. And we stratify risk of infection by the location the patient is housed, where the central line days, where the urinary catheter days are monitored. And of course, we may expect one kind of ICU maybe has a higher rate of CAUTI than, say, a surgical ward. So in this case, we do need to put our location down, and we have to have the date the patient was admitted to that inpatient unit. Again, we can apply the transfer rule if a UTI develops in a patient within 48 hours of transfer from a location and indicate the transferring location, not the current location of the patient. And the reason for that is the average time of incubation of an infectious disease is about 48 hours. So what we're saying is if the patient develops an infection, you know, 40 hours after transfer, then that infection was really incubating at the time of transfer, okay? Some other risk factors are we want to know whether a catheter was in place at the event onset, whether it had been removed within 48 hours, or neither, there was no catheter in place prior to the event. And many times we're not going to be needing that neither because we don't need to track those, but people in Pennsylvania do. And optional is your date of indwelling urinary catheter, and optional is the place where the catheter was inserted. That's just for you to keep track of if you want to. And again, you're going to have your available selections based on event type. Event criteria must be met. Okay, and here we go with our secondary DSI. If you have a healthcare-associated infection that meets criteria and you have an accompanying bloodstream positive, you can count the bloodstream as secondary. Or in this case, we can also call it a booty. Okay? And secondary bloodstream, again, we have to have at least one organism matching in the urine and one organism in the blood. And our example is a patient who has E. coli in her urine and her blood. This CAUTI is reported as a secondary DSI, yes, and the pathogen is E. coli. If this person has symptoms, then we have to meet symptomatic UTI. The bloodstream can be secondary. If the patient has no symptoms but meets the criteria for UTI with 100,000 colonies of E. coli and has the positive blood with E. coli, then that isn't a booty, okay? And that's why you have to keep your criteria kind of near and dear when you're working these things out with your events. Died, remember, this is also required for this protocol, and UTI contributed to death is only required if the patient died. Our event pathogens, this is a little confusing, but I want to let you know that this crosses all the protocols. You can physically add up to 3 pathogens, and you would present by the first in order of the way the lab usually reports them, because it's usually the largest amount of pathogen is reported first, second, third. But in reality, for our county, right, if you entered 3 pathogens, that would kick you out, because what does our rule say for county? 2, okay? But I just want to let you know the application goes across all the protocols. So for bloodstream infection, you can actually add 3. So I just wanted to show you that. And again, these are the same antibiogram schema that we talked about. It's consistent throughout all the protocols. Okay? And here is where we differ from SSI. We're going to look at our locations. We're going to count at the same time each day. You can decide that by your location, the number of patients on the unit, and the number of patients with an indwelling urinary catheter. We have some nice worksheets available if you have to have your helpers on the unit keep this information for you, or if you want to do it yourself and you don't have it electronically, you can go ahead and use those forms. And you can see, again, with CAUTI, we also want to see that you had no infections that month, not that you forgot to include the infection event report. So when you're filling your denominators out for the month, and in this case, this is the cardiac ICU in March 2010, you can see that you're filling out your total days. You know, in this case, we're also tracking central line days, urinary catheter days, infection, ventilator days, but you're also going to check the box if there are no events for that particular infection. In this case, we're talking about urinary catheter-associated events, so you're going to check no. There were no infections in March in my CMICU, cardiac ICU, okay? And remember, many of us are fortunate to have electronic capture of data, summary data, but we want you to be really a steward of these data, because we want you to check manually for the first 3 months to see if your IT person has got the thing going right or not, okay? So we want to make sure that they're pulling the information electronically correctly. And the way we ask you to do it is you do it by hand for 3 months, and you also do it electronically. If after the end of 3 months you're about 5% plus or minus, then we consider that to be an accurate electronic download of this information. And it really is good every once in a while, if you see your numbers kind of floating, go ahead and check it. Make sure your download is correct, okay? And this is our form for collecting our summary data. That's the data in our denominator, right? We have our infections is our numerator, or our CAUTI event infection, but our denominator is the population at risk. And here we go with here's our neonatal summary worksheet. And I did want to let you know, we had a request from some of the pediatric facilities to count urinary catheter days. Now, this is not common, is it, with babies and with pediatric, you know, well, this is NICU, but we do allow, occasionally infants evidently have urinary catheters in pediatric facilities when they're having urinary surgeries and all. So the pediatric facilities actually wanted this field, but it is not required. So don't worry about it. Just if you're not using that, which is going to be a small group, so just you would use this off-plan, but all of your other patient days, central line catheter days, vent days, are all here, stratified by birth weight, okay? And with our NICU or our ICU nursery population, One of the very important risk factors is to stratify by the birth weight. An infant less than 750 grams is going to be quite a different animal than the baby greater than 2,500 grams. The immune system, everything is going to be different. So you're always going to stratify in this group by birth weight. Okay, changes. See the happy road there? Okay. There will be changes implemented for the following issues. We have just recently come up with the exact information that will be done. We have to make sure we can fit it in and change all the protocols, and also the application itself is quite complicated. And I know we talked about at the members meeting in San Antonio, we kind of alluded to some of the changes we were talking about because we've been working with the HCPAC work group. But these changes have finally been finalized. And basically, again, we're going to have a minimum duration for admission before we identify healthcare associated. We will have a minimum duration of device presence before the infection is identified as device associated. And we, as I mentioned before, we're going to be starting to count by calendar days instead of 48 hours because we want to match all the way across the protocols, okay? And we will promise you get this information before January 1st. And you'll have time to digest it as well. We know there's lots coming down. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, maybe next year. But this year, what we say is a patient comes to you with a Foley. Once your facility starts using that Foley, just like the central line, once you start accessing that port of that central line, then that infection is yours, unless you can identify through the doctor's notes, through admitting history and physical, that patient came in with signs and symptoms of a UTI of some sort and the catheter was in place. That can be considered present on admission or community associated. So you have a window of time. If that patient presents with fever, costovertebral angle pain, and all that on admission and has the Foley in place, well, you know, you've got a community-associated infection, okay? You would not count that as an HAI. But you have to evaluate that in the beginning when the patient first presents, okay? And case studies. Now we're getting to the fun part again. This particular protocol never seems to take as long as SSI. SSI is just gigantic, really. So get your little clickers ready. Okay. These are just to remind you all that we, as I mentioned before, HCPAC, which is our, actually Gina P. Greasley is one of our newest members to HCPAC. It's the Hospital Infection Control Practice Committee, and it's been around for many years. These are the experts throughout the United States that come together and guide CDC with a lot of their infection guidelines in looking at things. And what we've decided is the surveillance branch decided that the surveillance definitions are under a tremendous amount of scrutiny, aren't they now? I mean, things are a whole lot different than 25 years ago when people voluntarily got together to share their data in NIF to identify ways to prevent healthcare-associated infections. That was the innocence days, right? Now we have public reporting of infections. We have all kinds of transparency of healthcare-associated infections. So we decided to involve our HCPAC experts, and we have a group that reviewed the CLABSI, the central line-associated bloodstream infection definitions, and we will be bringing you a new definition in January. Again, those will be decided as well, presented to you in plenty of time to review those. Again, I think you'll be happy with some of the decisions. And also, we have been looking at surgical site infection criteria as well. Now, some of these standards that are going to cross all the protocols, like changing from hours to days, that will cross over all of our protocols, including urinary tract criteria. Okay? So this is a work in progress, but we do have buy-in from our experts, expert physicians and other professionals throughout the United States when we update these criteria, we're really working together as a group. Okay, so case one, we have a 50-year-old patient with end-stage pancreatic cancer with liver and bone mets admitted to the hospital with advanced directives for comfort care and antibiotics only. The Foley catheter, peripheral IV, and nasal cannula are inserted. On day four, the patient is febrile to 38 degrees centigrade and has suprapubic tenderness. IV ampicillin is started after the urine is obtained for culture. On day five, the patient is breathing with difficulty. The chest x-ray shows an infiltrate in the left lung base. On day six, your urine cultures show 10 to the 5, 100,000 colony-forming units of E. coli. On day seven, the white blood cells show 34,000. We have patchy infiltrates in both lung bases and continued episodes of dyspnea. Rails are located in the left lower lobe. And on day 11, the patient expires. Does this patient have a UTI? If so, what type? And this is a voting question. Number one is yes. This is a SUTI criterion 1A. Number two, yes. This is a SUTI criterion 2A. Number three, yes. This is an ABUTI. Number four, no UTI. Okay, I've opened the polls. Anybody else voting? Thinking? Okay, I'll close the polling now. And oh, well, here's our polling. This one has a countdown. So I'm gonna give you time though, because this is not much time really to give you your choice here. And then 81% of us say. The answer is number one. This is a symptomatic UTI, criterion 1A. 12% of us say this is a symptomatic UTI, criterion 2A. One of us said it's an ABUTI, and 5% says there are no UTIs. And the answer is, this is SUTI, criterion 1A. Very good. Okay, and here's our rationale. 1A, the patient has a urinary catheter in place at the time of specimen collection, that's underlined. The patient does not meet criteria for fever, right? Because it has to be greater than 38 degrees centigrade, but the patient does meet the symptoms of suprapubic tenderness, and we have a positive urine culture of 10 to, greater than 10 or equal to 10 to the 5 colony-forming units and have no more than two species of microorganisms, okay? So fever is not high enough to meet criteria, but we had the other symptoms. Case two, we have a 66-year-old patient in the ICU with a Foley catheter, status post an exploratory laparotomy. The patient is noted to be febrile, 38.9 degrees centigrade, and complained of diffuse abdominal pain. The white blood cells increased to 19,000. The patient had cloudy, foul-smelling urine, and your analysis showed 2-plus protein, plus nitrates, 2-plus leukocyte esterase. The white blood count is 10,000 millimeters and 3-plus bacteria. The culture was also positive for 10,000, that's 10 to the 4, colony-forming units of E. coli. The abdominal pain seemed to be localized to the surgical area. Is this a UTI? And if so, what type? Number one, no, this is not a UTI. Number two, yes, this is a symptomatic UTI, a SUTI, criterion 1B. Three, yes, this is symptomatic UTI, criterion 2A. Four, yes, this is an ABUTI. Okay, now I'm going to go ahead and let you guys vote before we start with the counter. If you don't feel nervous. No pressure here. Okay. starting our countdown. So if you're not sure, just give it a good old college try and see what we come up with. Okay, let's see. 69% of us say the answer is 3. Yes, this is a symptomatic UTI, SUDI, criterion 2A. 18% of us say it's a SUDI criterion 1B. 8% of us say it is an ABUDI, and 4% of us say there's no UTI at all. And the answer is 3. This is a symptomatic UTI criterion 2A. And here is our rationale for 2A. The patient has an indwelling catheter in place at the time the specimen is collected or onset of signs and symptoms. We have fever of greater than 38 degrees centigrade or 100.4 Fahrenheit. And we have one of the following. In this case, we actually have two urinalysis findings, leukocyte esterase or nitrate, and positive urea culture, pyuria culture. And we also have a culture of greater than 10 to the 3 or less than 10 to the 5, which is 10,000 colony-forming units, in this case, of a microorganism. So we do meet criterion 2A. Case 3, an 84-year-old patient is sent to the long-term acute care, LTAC, with a diabetic foot ulcer. On day 3, the patient has an indwelling catheter in place and no signs and symptoms of infection. On day 9, the patient becomes hypotensive, and the CBC shows a white blood count of 15,000. The temp is 38 degrees Celsius, and the foot ulcer is draining a moderate amount of purulent drainage. The patient is pan-cultured, and the blood culture and urine both grow strep pyogenes greater than 10 to the 5th, greater than 100,000 colony-forming units. The foot culture is positive, Pseudomonas aeruginosa. Is this a UTI? And if so, what type? Number one, this is a voting question. Number one, no, because the blood seeded the urine and is therefore no UTI. Number two, yes, this is an ABUDI, an asymptomatic bacteremic UTI. Three, this is SUDI, symptomatic UTI criterion 1A with a secondary bloodstream infection. So let's start, go back and look if you need to look at the case, talk among yourselves. Okay, let's put the counter on. All right, so we've gone through our counter here. We didn't have quite as many responses, so I think people were kind of thinking, but that's okay, we've got enough to make a difference here. The first answer is no, because the blood is seeded and is therefore not a UTI. Let's see what the answer is. And here's our pie chart. And 63% of us said the answer is number 2, this is an ABUDI. And the answer is this is an ABUDI, okay? This patient had positive blood that matched, and it was a urinary pathogen that matched the urinary findings. The tricky part was, let's see, this patient, the fever was 38, but it did not meet our criteria for fever. So we had no fever. So because of this, this infection is considered ABUDI. And it sometimes is a little difficult, to ferret out the ABUDI, okay? So this is a good example. Because do our patients always cooperate and have one infection at a time? Absolutely not. So we need to kind of look at the whole picture here. The positive blood culture, we had one with a uropathogen matching the urine culture. Now, what if the organism in both cultures had been Micrococcus? Is this a UTI? And this is a voting question as well. One is yes, this is an Abudi, asymptomatic bacteremic UTI. Two, no, this is not an Abudi. So go ahead and vote. What if the organism in both cultures had been Micrococcus? Does this change our answer? Okay, let's put the timer on for those of you that are indecisive. Okay, and the answer is, you all said 71% of you, which is the second choice, no, this is not an Abudi. Okay, the answer is no, this is not an Abudi. 29% of you said this is an Abudi, so let's look at why. Micrococcus is not a uropathogen. Therefore, it cannot be an Abudi. So when we get to look, we've got that positive blood and we've got that Sudi. And we've got, actually we don't have a Sudi because we have the positive findings of the urinary culture with 100,000 colonies and we have a positive matching blood. But if we have signs and symptoms of infection, it'll never be a Abudi. But if we have none, then this can be a Abudi, but we remember when we go apply a Abudi, you can only count uropathogens, okay? I know. Luckily, Abudi doesn't happen as often, and when you get your blood cultures going, you're going to want to really look carefully then, and we'll help you too. If you have a difficult patient, go ahead and send us the case with all the information, the dates, the times, the cultures, and we'll be glad to adjudicate the case for you and help you go through the rationale. So again, here's our list of uropathogens. So when you go to apply your Abudi criteria because your patient didn't meet Sudi, for example, you go try to do Sudi, the patient has these positive findings but no signs and symptoms, so you can't meet Sudi, can you? So then you go look at Abudi. And in our Abudi, you'll see these are the uropathogens, okay? And only these. So if you don't have these, then you may not be able to count either a symptomatic UTI infection or an asymptomatic bacteremic UTI infection. And it is okay. You know, we IPs always want to find something and put it in place. And sometimes you work really hard to meet the surveillance criteria, and you don't meet it, do you? And the physician may be counting this infection clinically and may be treating with antibiotics. But it is okay not to include that finding, that event, as an event in NHSN if surveillance criteria are not met. Because there will be cases that are clinically relevant that don't meet our surveillance criteria. Okay? Case 4, May 5th. Patient, 76-year-old woman, is admitted from an LTAC at 8 a.m. for surgical debridement of the sacral detubitus. Routine admission UA performed, positive for leukocyte esterase and three white blood cells by spun urine. Patient is afebrile, denies urinary urgency, frequency, or pain. There is no suprapubic or costovertebral pain. The Foley catheter and peripheral IV are inserted in the OR. On May 6th at 8 o'clock, the Foley is draining clear urine. The wound vac is to the operative site. The temperature is 37.6 degrees centigrade, and the wound vac has minimal bloody drainage. The next day, the temperature rises to 38.2 centigrade. The patient complains of pain with palpation to the suprapubic area. Encouraged to push PO fluids, and the urine specimen is sent to the lab for culture and sensitivity. Bactrim is started. On May 8th, We have temperatures of 37.4 centigrade following two doses of antibiotics. On May 9th, we get the results of the urine culture, which is positive for E. coli greater than 100,000 colony-forming units. At this time, the patient is afebrile and preparing for discharge back to the LTAC. Does this patient have a catheter-associated UTI? Yes, the patient has a catheter-associated UTI. Is symptomatic UTI criterion 1A with E. coli? No, the patient has SUDI, but it is not catheter-associated. And three, no, the patient does not have a UTI since the infection was present upon admission. So take some time to look at these answers. And the question is, does this patient have a catheter-associated UTI? It's a tricky one. Okay, go back and look. Okay, I'm going to put the counter on for your last 10 seconds. Okay, we have voted. 71% of us say, yes, this patient has a catheter-associated UTI. It's symptomatic UTI, criterion 1A, and the organism is E. coli. 16% of us say, no, the patient has a symptomatic UTI, but it is not catheter-associated. And 13% of us say, no, the patient does not have a UTI since the infection was present upon admission. And the answer is yes. This patient has catheter-associated UTI SUDI criterion 1A with E. coli. So let's go over the rationale. Okay, here's our criterion 1A. Our patient has an indwelling catheter in place at the time of specimen collection or onset of signs and symptoms. And this patient met two of the symptoms. The fever was greater than 38 degrees centigrade, and the patient had suprapubic tenderness, and we had a positive urine culture of greater or equal to 10 to the 5 colony-forming units with no more than two species of microorganisms. In this case, it was E. coli. Remember, this patient was admitted with a positive UA, but a UA alone with no other signs and symptoms of an infection. UAs can be positive for many non-infectious reasons. Since symptoms of UTI were not present upon admission to your facility and developed only following Foley insertion, this is considered catheter-associated UTI in NHSN and should be reported as such. Okay, so a lot of times we do have facilities trying to do certain screening tests, right, upon admission to help them identify whether the infection is present on admission or not. A UA alone, though, is just not enough, because especially certain people can be colonized, they can be, their urine is not completely clear for a lot of reasons, and that alone is not enough. Your patient has to be coming in with some signs and symptoms. The doctor either needs to write, rule out UTI, the patient has a possible UTI, or there needs to be some sort of symptoms that help you identify that the patient came in present on admission with this infection. Okay, case five. A 48-year-old man involved in a motorcycle accident, closed head injury, multiple fractures, taken to OR for surgery. The Foley catheter and left subclavian catheter was placed in the ED. The patient remains on a ventilator. in the that was placed in the OR, and lungs are clear bilaterally at this time. 6 days post-op, we have a temperature of 98.8 Fahrenheit, bronchi in the left base. Chest x-ray shows possible infiltrate and atelectasis in this area. The urine is draining clear yellow urine bifoley, and the patient remains ventilated. The sputum is increasing and is white in color. On day 7, our temp increases to 100.3 Fahrenheit. Vent settings are stable. On post-op day 8, the temp is 101.9 Fahrenheit. The patient is on a vent with the Foley and the central line, and pan cultures are sent at this time. Empiric antibiotic treatment is begun. On day 9, the urine culture comes back with 100,000 colony-forming units of Pseudomonas aeruginosa. The sputum is growing Pseudomonas aeruginosa. The blood culture is negative. The patient's physical assessment is normal, and there is no patient response to suprapubic or costovertebral angle palpation. Does this patient have a UTI? And if so, what type? Number one, no, this patient does not have a UTI. Number two, this patient has a booty asymptomatic bacteremic UTI. Three, yes, this patient has sooty, suprapubic, symptomatic UTI, criterion 2A. Yes, this patient has sooty, symptomatic UTI, criterion 1A. Okay, so go back and look at your case. Apply your criteria. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and put the counter on. All right. Let's see what our answers are here. We have 48% of the audience says that this is, yes, it's a CD1A. This is a symptomatic UTI, criterion 1A. 30% of you say, one, there is no urinary tract infection. 14% of us say, two, this is an abuti, an asymptomatic bacteremic UTI. And 8% of us say, yes, this is sooty 1A, symptomatic UTI 1A. This is interesting because let's see what the answer is. This is a sooty 1A. So really, this is 48% of you got it correct. So that's good. But really, compared to some of the other answers, it was only half right. So let's look at the rationale. Yes, this patient has sooty 1A. The patient has fever and a positive urine culture of greater than 100,000 colony-forming units with one pathogen. So remember, you have to have a fever, and in Fahrenheit, it's greater than 100.4. Remember, even if the fever may be a day off from the culture or the symptoms, you know, as long as it's related in time, temporally, you can count that as the same infection event. What if this patient had been afebrile but had an elevated white blood count for which they sent the cultures that were reported out the same way? Would this be a UTI? Would this patient have a UTI if the following criterion, let's see, if the patient had been a febrile and elevated white cells? Okay. No, this is not a UTI. Yes, this is symptomatic UTI criterion 1A, or yes, this is an ABUTI. Okay, we're thinking about this one, huh? Talk among yourselves, see if you can figure it out together. Sometimes two heads are better than one. We have only 15 people that put their vote in. Don't be afraid. It's okay. I'm not going to grade you. This team. Okay, let's keep going. All right, come on. See if anybody... Okay, it's closed. All right. Well, you were all right then. There is no... I'm getting tired. It's... Oh, my God. That's right. So good. We only got 15 responses in, but no. A patient without symptoms and no matching blood culture, the patient cannot meet any of the UTI criteria. Surveillance definitions work better in some populations than others. Patients should be thoroughly assessed for UTI symptoms, including suprapubic and costovertebral angle pain. And I know sometimes that's a problem. If you can get to talk to your clinicians about the importance of a physical exam in this case. But remember, many times our clinical diagnosis does not line up with the surveillance definition. But still, as part of NHSN, you do need to report your surveillance definitions consistently. Okay, case six. On September 1st, we have a 73-year-old patient in a neurosurgical ICU, admitted 7 days ago following a cerebral vascular accident. The patient is ventilated. The subclavian catheter and Foley catheter has been in place since admission. The patient relaxed only to painful stimuli. On 9-2, white blood count is slightly elevated at 12,000. And the temperature is 37.4 centigrade, the urine is cloudy, the lungs are clear. On 9-3, we have an elevated white count of 15.8, our temperature is 37.6 centigrade, our breath sounds are slightly coarse with minimum clear sputum, the urine is unchanged, the blood, urine, and endotracheal cultures are collected, and no costovertebral or suprapubic angle pain is noted. On 9-4, the blood and endotracheal cultures are no growth, but the urine is positive for Enterococcus faecium. Does this patient have a UTI? If so, what type? Number one, yes, this is an ABUTI. Number two, yes, this is SUTI, criterion 1A. Number three, yes, this is SUTI, criterion 1B. And number four, no, this is no UTI. Okay. Okay, we'll put the counter on. Go ahead and give it a good guess. Remember, when we're in our offices, we'll have all of our information in front of us to make that determination. Okay, let's see what the answer is. 65% of us say that this is a SUTI criterion 1B infection. 25% say it is an ABUTI, an asymptomatic bacteremic UTI. 10% of us say this infection is a symptomatic UTI criterion 1A. And one of us said it's a symptomatic criterion 1B. Okay. And the answer is we have no UTI. Okay. So, yes, 63% of us were correct. All right. And here's our rationale. Because there are no urinary symptoms, nor fever of greater than 38 degrees centigrade, nor matching blood culture, there is no UTI. And this does happen, right? Okay, here's case six. Same case, twisted around a little bit here. If the patient's temp was 38.1 degrees centigrade and the patient also met criteria for pneumonia, including a positive bronchoalveolar lavage for Enterobacter faecium and Enterococcus faecium, what would we do then? Does this patient now have a UTI? One, no, the patient's fever is due to the pneumonia, therefore the patient has no symptoms related to the urine. Two, yes, the fever is a nonspecific symptom and may be due to more than one cause at once. Okay, let's see the counter here. Okay, the voting is closed. Okay, 24% of us say the patient's fever is due to pneumonia, therefore the patient is symptomless. 76% of us say yes, fever is a nonspecific symptom and may be due to more than one cause at once. The answer is two, yes. Fever is a nonspecific symptom and may be due to more than one HAI at once, or one infection at once. And our rationale here is the patient does meet criteria, symptomatic UTI criterion 1A, an indwelling catheter is present, fever and a urine culture of greater than 100,000 colonies with less than two organisms. Okay? Case 7, we have a 4-year-old girl admitted following a motor vehicle accident and taken to the OR for OPRA reduction and internal fixation of multiple upper and lower extremity fractures. She was admitted to the pediatric surgical care unit with a Foley catheter draining yellow urine, and her right femur is to traction. An IV is in the right antecubital vein. On 8/18, she's afebrile and her Foley is draining well. On 8/19, she's tolerating a solid diet. The IV is converted to the saline lock and Foley is still draining yellow urine. On 8/20, the Foley is removed. After dinner, the patient is voiding without problems and has a slight cough. The next day, the patient has a temp of 37.5 centigrade. Her cough continues and phlegm has changed to slightly yellow. On 8/22 in the morning, the patient is requesting the bed prance frequently, crying with urination. Her temp is 37.9 centigrade. Her straight cap urine is collected. Urine is cloudy. Her UA is positive for leukocyte esterase. Nitrates negative. 4+ white blood count by high-powered field of spun urine. And later, the Gram stain of the urine showed many Gram-negative rods. Empiric Bactrim is ordered at that time. And the next day, her urine culture grew 50,000 colony-forming units of E. coli. Does this patient have a UTI? Number one is no. Number two is yes. It's symptomatic UTA criterion 1B. Number three is yes. This is the SUTI criterion 2A. Four is yes. This is the symptomatic UTI SUTI criterion 2B. You can go ahead and vote. Okay. Think about it. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and put the counter on. We're counting down, so make your decision if you can. Okay, does this patient have a UTI? Okay, 45% of us say Yes, the patient has CD, TB. 43% of us say, yes, this patient has CD2A. 9% of us say, yes, we have a CD1B. And one of us says that we have no UTI at all. And the answer is, the majority is correct by just a slight margin. 45% of you say yes, this meets criterion, symptomatic UTI criterion CD. And here it is. You can see that CD2A rather, the patient has a urinary catheter removed within 48 hours prior to the specimen collection or onset of signs or symptoms. And the patient, again, now that the catheter is out, we can add the criteria, frequency and dysuria, and we have a positive urinalysis with leukocyte esterase and a white blood count of urine and microorganisms seen on the Gram stain. So we can meet criteria 2A. Okay? Case 8, we have a 68-year-old diabetic female transferred to the IRF from the acute care facility. Status post knee arthroplasty. The Foley on admission is draining pink urine. The bulb suction to both knees via stab wounds is draining small amount of bloody drainage. The IV is in the left forearm and is fine. 9-2, the drain is removed and the patient is up to the bathroom with the help of the physical therapist as the Foley is removed. The IV continues and the patient is taking full liquids and is afebrile. On 9-3, the patient goes to physical therapy but complains of burning with urination and urgency, suprapubic pain upon palpation, temperature was 37.8 centigrade, urine collected and sent for culture, and the UA is positive, 10-plus white blood cells by high-powered field of unspun urine and a positive leukocyte esterase. Empiric antibiotics are begun, and the urine culture grows 100,000 colonies of Staph epi. Does this patient have a UTI attributable to the acute care facility? Yes, this patient has CD1A attributed to the acute care facility. No, the patient's CD1A is attributed to the IRF, the inpatient rehab facility, or no, 3, the patient does not have a UTI. Okay. Start voting. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and put the counter on. Okay, and we say that in this case, our patient does have a CD1A, and it's attributed to the acute care facility. 24% of us say no, it is attributed to the rehab, inpatient rehab facility, and 8% of us say no, the patient does not have a UTI. And the answer is yes. The patient does have a UTI criterion 1A attributed to the acute care facility. Here's the rationale. Since the patient had a Foley and was transferred from an acute care facility within 48 hours of symptom onset, the transfer rule applies and the CAUTI event is attributed to the acute care facility. And you can see here we can use some of those other signs and symptoms because we have no catheter in place at the time that the UTI occurred. All right? And these are just two quick little cases just helping you identify your catheter days correctly. Okay? This is a little test here. How many indwelling catheter days will we count for these patients? And the catheter count is done at 12 noon on this unit. Okay? So how many indwelling catheter days, this is not a voting question, do we have? Okay, kind of look and see. This particular unit counts their catheter days at noon. Oh, excuse me, direct drainage. Foley to direct drain, inflowing Foley to direct drainage to the bag. Okay, any other? Okay. Oh, there is, there's actually voting, but we went ahead and found out that the answer is 2. And here are our 2 patients that had Foleys in place. Okay. All right, we have an indwelling Foley to direct drainage and an indwelling Foley to direct drainage. Okay. But he was admitted at 2 p.m. Remember, we count at noon. Okay, so that's, yeah. I know it's a little complicated, but it's a good practice for you all. Okay, here we've got one more, and we've got to wake you up here because this group counts their catheter days at 11 o'clock at night. So, how many indwelling catheter days on this unit? 11 o'clock at night. Even though the voting shows up, it's not turned on for these questions. Okay. And the answer is 1. And there's our 1 case. Mr. Dallas has an indwelling Foley to direct drainage, and he was there all of day 2. Okay? So great job today, guys. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed it. All right, great. Well, the timing was just right on this particular program. So if you would, please don't take the voting device as your souvenir. Yeah, I have to bring 100 of them back or I'll be in trouble.
So there's a question in the back?
Yes. Uh-huh. Case 1. Uh-huh. Well, you know, if the patient dies before any urinary catheter culture is done, obviously you can't follow through with that. If the patient is having symptoms and they die, but the culture had been drawn, you know, a few hours before death, and you get a positive result, and the doctor started empiric antibiotics, then you would count that as a healthcare-associated infection.
Okay. So listen, please fill out your evaluations. They're in your packet, and they're on the yellow-colored sheet. We would really appreciate that. And as Gloria said, leave all your little clickers in the middle of the table so I can find them and pick them up. If you want to take any of the extra handouts, please do, if you want to take them back to the folks at your facility. So please join me in thanking Gloria Morrell for a wonderful morning.
Thank you, and we will be having both of those presentations with the case studies and the answers posted within the next day or 2.
Yeah, they'll be at premierinc.com/safety. And one last request. I don't know if the name badges are still out there on the table, but if anybody did not pick up their name badge, we were trying to get a final count, or if you did not register at the front desk, just stop by and give them your name. We want to get a final count of who actually came. So thank you very much. Safe travels home.